everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Art O'Cal here with you every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your ESPN podcasts, as well the NHL on ESPN YouTube. Wish, may I have the honor of starting winners and losers from the weekend?
By all means. And first of all, a big shout out to the Eastern Conference for not being done at the time of our taping. Like, what the hell,
man? Your winner?
Like, I really thought we were going to hit the ground running this week, be able to talk about the solidified playoff matchups in the Eastern Conference. I'm at that Rangers-Islanders game over the weekend. I'm watching the action on Saturday night. I'm like, well, damn it. What are we supposed to do on Monday now with everything being all up in the air?
We will dive.
By the time you listen to this, it may not be up in the air. I hope for your sake that it isn't. But for us right now, Arda, let's get to our winners and losers.
It's definitely going to be up in the air until the very end of the season. this was hilarious to me. So off the ice in the NHL, a winner for me is Mark Messier's cup chase. Why am I saying this? He already has six Stanley Cups. He's an analyst for us on ABC and ESPN. But to me, one of the funniest moments of the weekend was it started with the Stanley Cup visited Bristol, our headquarters at ESPN, and they put it in Studio W, where ABC, the big giant studio, also NFL Live is there, the NHL out of there as well, ABC Hockey Saturdays. So the Stanley Cup is there, it's on the desk, and Mark Messier does this funny bit with PK Subban, who, of course, never won the Stanley Cup as a player, so he's like pointing out his names on the cup. He's like, oh, my name is there, and my name is there, and then eventually, he turns to PK and he's like, hey, do you want to touch the cup? And of course, like any hockey player, superstitious, I don't want to touch the cup. Maybe I'll win it as a coach or whatever one day. So PK is like, no, I'm not going to touch the Stanley Cup, which then leads Mark Messier to pick up the Stanley Cup and run after PK with the Stanley Cup in hand. So they're basically running around the studio, sort of like the Benny Hill music is like playing in the background as like PK is running away from Mark Messier, who has Lord Stanley in his clutches, to the point where they go to the stairs, Wish, and PK starts running up the stairs in the studio and Mess almost follows him. Yeah. And he takes a couple steps and he's like, all right, I'm going to stop here and turn around and step back down. But it's just hilarious. Like the visual of Mess with the cup chasing after PK. He was like, I'm not going to touch this thing.
Messier got to those stairs and he was like, okay, when was my last game in the NHL? And then he just backed away. No, the visual of PK running up the stairs and running away from this, it was like watching like a vampire faced with a garlic covered crucifix. Yes. like he was full on sprinting for his life to not have that cup touch him and curse him. It was really, really funny. I got it. Loser for me, injury conspiracy theorist. Now look, everybody, Mark Stone, he's back practicing with the Vegas Golden Knights. We all know the lacerated spleen story, the injury prognosis for that, when he might be able to come back. The trajectory seems very familiar for all of us that have seen this story before with him potentially maybe coming back for the first round of the playoffs. Look, we got to stop accusing the Vegas Golden Knights of faking injuries. I know that there are people out there that believe that these teams that use long-term injury reserve are embellishing injuries or something to allow their guys rest before they reach the postseason or to circumvent the cap, whatever. But you're only distracting from the real crime here, which is that it's entirely possible that Mark Stone will be healthy enough to play in game one of the playoffs, but not healthy enough to play in game 82. The easy fix here, Arda, the easy fix for the NHL and the GMs, should they want to take it, which I don't believe the GMs do because they all want to be able to use this loophole, is that if you have a player on long-term injured reserve in game 82 of the regular season, he has to miss the first two games of the playoffs. Easy peasy. Easy fix. No playoff cap. No nothing. We don't have to get our abacus out to figure out numbers for the salary cap in the postseason. You don't play in game 82 and you're all on long-term injured reserve. You don't play the first two games of the playoffs. Easy fix.
What I like a lot about what you said there is the GM's either going to be all on board with it or not.
Yeah.
And if they're not on board and they want to stay in the current system, which it sounds like they do,
yeah,
then it's really on us to stop complaining about it. Because at the end of the day, every team in that situation can do the same thing if that's how the cards fall.
Their concern is the regular season cap. Their concern is being able to do all their business and use that long-term injury reserve salary cap space. So again, make me commissioner. I fix the whole thing. You can still circumvent the cap in the regular season, but you pay a small penalty for having an injured player and he doesn't play the first two games of the playoffs.
I will fix the whole thing, he says, not just this situation, the entire league.
That's right.
Winner, Denver. Congratulations to the Pioneers for winning their 10th national championship in college hockey. They defeated the number one team in the country, Boston College, shut them out 2-0. Denver won four straight games, scoring two goals, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, and then 2-0 in the Natty in order to get here. They were the highest scoring team in the nation, over 4.7 goals per game on average, and they had not won a single game scoring two or less the entire season, and that's exactly what they did going into the tournament. Matt Davis, the goaltender, absolutely stellar, awesome. Had the save of the tournament to preserve the shutout as well. And also, I want to give a shout out to Denver. So, as I said, the 10th national championship in program history. So they were tied with Michigan for that record at 9. They now move to 10 in sole possession. This is the first time in college hockey history that a team other than the Michigan Wolverines owns that record exclusively, which is kind of cool. So congratulations to the Pios.
Loser for me, Boston hockey. What happened? Dude, Boston University doesn't play for the Natty. We don't get to see Macklin Celebrini on the biggest stage of the NCAA season. That's a bummer. Boston College, an absolute juggernaut during the regular season, fails to win the national championship for the first time. It would have been for the first time since 2012. That's a bummer. Most of all, the biggest bummer, we didn't get to see BU and BC play each other for the national championship. For the first time since 1978, it would have been. You could listen. I love John Buccigross. I think John Buccigross is a great play-by-play guy. But Arda, you could hear the slight twinge of disappointment in John Buccigross's voice as he's watching BU fall to Denver in the semifinal matchup. And I think he speaks for all of us because we all wanted to see an all Boston final. Due respect to the Pioneers, and we didn't get it.
I will say congratulations to Macklin Celebrini on winning the Hobie Baker. Another trophy in the case as he is set to become the number one overall pick in the NHL draft. Are you just brace yourself for my next winner wish?
Okay.
Have a nice seat. Grab a nice cup of coffee. Just calm yourself. Take a moment of zen because I'm about to disrupt it in a second here. Yep. Okay. Very good. Very good. I'll let you. Yep. Have a nice sip there. Calm. Winner. Canada. Winning the gold medal at the IIHF Women's World Championship 6-5 in overtime over our ESPN colleague Hillary Knight and Team USA. Mm-hmm. Ah, feels so good, man.
Yeah.
Bask in the glory with me, buddy. Come on in. Jump Love on it. The bandwagon. Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Lots of room.
So excited and proud for Canada. Basically, you know, you won the President's Trophy, but we'll take the cup in the Olympics, baby.
We'll see. We'll see.
Loser for me, loser points. I was at that Islanders-Rangers game over the weekend where the Islanders picked up a shootout loss in this case to pick up another point in the standings. And Anders Lee said after the game to me that, you know, there's a certain amount of satisfaction. They pulled a point out of that game at the very least. Well, going into Monday, the Islanders were better than anybody in the league at pulling a satisfactory point out of overtime or shootout losses. Their 16 overtime or shootout losses will be the highest for a playoff team, assuming they make it, and I assume that they will, since the shootout was adopted in 2005. The previous high was 15 by three different teams. The Islanders' 27 regulation wins are the lowest for any current playoff seed. But hey, man. They found a way, baby. They picked up the loser points, as many as they could, and they will probably qualify for the playoffs based on the strength of them. But, man, more OT or shootout losses are than any other team since the shootout was started back in 2005. That's crazy.
Adjacent to that, and shout out to Pete Blackburn for tweeting this a few days ago, Buffalo Sabres fans very unhappy about this. So Pete put out a tweet and said, if the system happened to be the 3-2-1 just like it is in the PWHL, basically rewarding regulation wins, obviously. The Sabres would have only been 1 point behind due to how many regulation wins they have in the season as compared to the rest of the people in the Eastern Conference wildcard hunt. So
yeah.
Not to pile on Sabres fans, by the way, because they've been through enough.
They've been through enough. By the time you listen to this, who knows? Maybe the tiebreaker situation will still be salient by the end of the season and the regulation win deficit does come into play. Maybe so, maybe not. But for now, the Islanders are a playoff team based on the strength of having lost at the right time, which is basically what it is.
Yeah, one more winner for me, Spicy Pork and On One Knee. Louis Domingue, goalie goal this past weekend, and not just any goalie goal. Does it to seal the playoffs for the Hartford Wolfpack in the AHL in the home barn. He grabs the puck, quick turnaround, right in front of him, still on one knee, floats it just above the crowd, and goes right into the net. Mm. You love to see a goalie goal, and bonus points for it being in such a stressful situation. It's not like, you know, it was garbage time and they were up by two or, in, you know, an inconsequential game. This was to seal their playoff spot. So wow. You love to see it. Also, quick shout out to the Wolfpack for having me at their game, host their game on Sunday. It was Star Wars night. And I just seek them out, Wish. Wherever I see hockey and Star Wars connected in some way, I'm like, I want to be there. So thanks to the Wolfpack for having me. It was fun.
You put hand to head, I feel a great disturbance in the force, like someone is having a Star Wars night in a minor league arena, and you have to fly the Falcon wherever. There immediately.
That's
and
right.
See what's going on.
That's exactly. Right. And park it on the roof. And exactly. Speaking of roofs, there will be a new one for Arizona Coyotes players and hockey staff. It appears that Salt Lake City is an inevitability, that the Arizona Coyotes, at least the players and the hockey operations part of the equation, will be playing as soon as next season in Salt Lake City. Can you update us, Wish, on what is going on here?
Yes, right. The two inevitable things in life, Thanos and Coyotes relocation. Coyotes players and staff informed recently that they're going to be moving to Salt Lake City. That was reported by our colleague Emily Kaplan. An announcement is expected either Thursday or Friday before the playoffs, if all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, according to sources. The deal still needs approval by the NHL's Board of Governors before it's announced, but it's expected that it's just going to be a quick stamp of approval there. Basically, the way it's going to work, we talked about it in kind of a theoretical way last episode, but that's kind of how it's going to work. The NHL buys the Coyotes from Alex Morello for like $1 billion and then sells a kind of new team, not expansion, but sort of expansion team to Ryan Smith, the Utah Jazz owner, for between $1.2 and $1.3 billion. He will acquire the Coyotes players and their hockey operations department of the transaction. And again, the NHL is still interested in getting back to Arizona at some point. They love the Phoenix market. And a league source told ESPN that the deal that they're making will allow Alex Morello to retain the team name, intellectual property, in the hopes of reactivating the Coyotes within a 5-year period if Morello is able to secure and build and make significant progress on an arena, which is obviously what they're trying to do with that land auction this summer. So, you know, it'll cost him $1 billion to reactivate the team, but he'll have the opportunity to bring the Coyotes back to Arizona if the arena deal does happen and goes through. One other note, Morello is actively trying to get the AHL Roadrunners to play at Mullet Arena, kind of keep a presence there. That would probably be obviously the Utah minor league team. But I have some sources have told me that that's got a long way to go, that Arizona State University is going to have a bit of a say on that one. And they may not mm-hmm. necessarily be all that supportive about having a minor league team eating up dates in that arena.
So a situation does exist, a very real possibility that in, let's say, 5-6 years, there's a team in Salt Lake that moved from Arizona that used to be the Arizona Coyotes. And now they're playing in Salt Lake, whatever name they become. And also the Arizona Coyotes with the name and branding that we all know.
Chena jerseys.
Returns to the NHL, but they are formed under an expansion draft. So it's correct. A totally different, it's almost like Arizona Coyotes 2.0, whatever.
Yeah.
And there could be a game on the ice, or would be a game on the ice, between that Coyotes team and the Salt Lake City team.
Correct.
And this could happen as early as, like, what, 5 years?
Yeah, which again is kind of nutty. I mean, two things on that one. First of all, obviously very nutty the way this whole thing could work out, where the NHL basically says, look, let's just take a pause in the market until you figure out this arena thing. And then Alex Morello, you can come back in if you have an arena and have the $1 billion we handed you to then spend on an expansion team. But the really wacky part, though, I talked to a source over the weekend who said this is a very complicated transaction because of all this stuff. And the same source said, you got to give Ryan Smith in Utah credit because this guy wanted an expansion team. And the NHL basically came to him and said, look, we've got a team that we got to relocate now. We're tired of the Mullet Arena thing. We're not sure about an arena there. You know, help us out, dude. And he did him a solid, basically, by taking on this Coyotes team versus, you know, what he really wanted was an expansion team. And the grand irony of it, Arda, is that if the Coyotes re-enter this league within the next 5 years and we still have the same expansion draft rules, they might be in a better position than Ryan Smith's Utah team to be successful based on how we've seen the Golden Knights and Kraken succeed under these expansion draft rules. So it could be kind of ironic.
That is a crazy thought that the next iteration of the Arizona Coyotes could very well win a Stanley Cup before the Utah team that used to be the Coyotes.
But it's possible. It's possible.
No, it's possible. I'm not saying it's probable. I'm saying it's a possibility. That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy to think. Speaking of crazy stories in hockey, once upon a time, a movie helped save Joe Sakic in Colorado. We're going to dive into that right now. Very happy to have here on ESPN's The Drop, Charlie Lyons, who is the original owner of the Colorado Avalanche, moving the team from the Quebec Nordiques from Quebec City to Colorado. And of course, the documentary is called Saving Sakic, an incredible story that sometimes feels too surreal to believe, but it actually happened in the late 90s. Joe Sakic was once saved by a movie, Air Force One. In some ways, we'll dive into that with Charlie. Charlie, thanks for being here. I don't want to spoil too much of the movie. I know people watching this may know the story already, but there's a lot of cool things that are uncovered in the story. I want to start with this, though. You've done a lot in your career. You've been an executive of many companies. You've worked in many different industries. You've produced many blockbuster Hollywood movies. I'm curious, where does this crazy Sakic saga of needing to raise money in a week, offer sheets, the Rangers trying to steal this player, where does this saga rank in terms of the most crazy, hilarious, out of this world business stories in your career?
It certainly is the top of the pile is in terms of the most chaotic week that I ever spent. There is such a tendency with these things, because they are sort of business traumas of sort, because you think of what could have happened. You know, you can say whatever you want about five draft picks, but who are you kidding? You lose an icon like Joe Sakic coming right on the heels of potentially, you know, what was the worst mistake of my life was letting Dikembe Mutombo go to the Hawks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was fascinating to revisit. And candidly, there was an enormous amount that I did not know about that week.
So the documentary will be out April 16th in Canada on Prime and April 17th on ESPN Plus. And a lot obviously is made about the movie Air Force One starring Harrison Ford and how successful that movie was and the timing of it with needing to raise funds to keep Joe Sakic match the offer sheet that the Rangers put forth. I know that you've been asked this question before, but humor us. What if that doesn't happen? What if one of many things, Air Force One is a flop, the other movies that were competing at the time don't get moved to different release dates like Titanic and Conspiracy Theory? Like, what if it didn't work out in that way? How would you have raised the money?
Look, the truth is that it was a changing in the guard, the beginning of the changing in the guard in professional sports to families that were, frankly, better for the industry, for the fans, and for the teams than this generation of owners, which, you know, Dave tells a story about what it was like to be with the Utah Jazz and not, you know, being able to cash his check, his paycheck, before Adrian Dantley's cleared, that you realize that there was a very romantic character to us running around trying to keep the lights on. But frankly, Colorado and Denver is in much better shape today, having the Waltons overseeing, you know, life at the Broncos, and having the Kroenke family overseeing the Nuggets and the Avalanche. It was the beginning of the changing of the guard. And so when you look back at it and you realize that moment, it's very romantic, it's very fun, but it's also the natural succession planning, and it's just fine, right?
In the last moments of the documentary, there seemed to be a line that they were trying to draw between the second contract offer and you guys matching it, and the establishment of the salary cap in 2005, several years later. I mean, obviously the Sakic thing happens, the Messier signing with Vancouver happens, I think, the same offseason. Do you think that this whole ordeal that you went through with Sakic and free agency gave Gary Bettman and the other owners fodder to establish the cap finally and try to keep salaries under control?
My personal opinion is that there's no question when you see the little guy just getting beat up, because that was clearly a wealth disparity that you were seeing in real time, that the New York Rangers and the Madison Square Garden operation was a giant compared to what we were operating. And so there's no question that if you have that kind of economic disparity, that's going to get translated into the competitive product. And what Gary's been able to do as a result of the changes that he made to the structure of the league is parity. And that's really what you want.
Very, very serious question here, Charlie. We know by the time the Avalanche won their next Stanley Cup in 2001, you weren't owner of the team anymore. But Harrison Ford does appear in the documentary Saving Sakic. He's sitting beside you in a living room. The one thing that I didn't notice in those scenes, though, was Harrison Ford proudly displaying a 2001 Stanley Cup championship ring. And I thought to myself, you know, for a guy that makes a blockbuster movie, stars in a blockbuster movie, and helps keep Captain Joe Sakic in Colorado, and then they go on to win another cup, didn't Harrison Ford deserve a ring? Did he ever receive one, Charlie?
That is a fair accusation, but I'm happy to report that they presented him and his very, very able leader of his production company, Renee, jerseys with their name put on it. Thanks to the National Hockey League, they can obviously avail themselves of a professional hockey game probably forever. But you're right, we should probably get him a ring too.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it seems like a pretty hefty assist.
I think
Charlie,
he deserves one. He would wear it proudly somewhere. I'm not sure where he'd wear it, but he'd wear it.
Hell, I put his name on the cup. I heard you guys became real good friends, you and Harrison, through this making of the movie thing, and the point where you've, I think, vacationed together. What's a vacation like with Harrison Ford?
Look, I could talk about him all day. You're not going to find a better person in the business. Your parent company, you look at the relationship he has with the Walt Disney Company, it's that way everywhere. He is one of the most humble human beings on earth. He's one of the most decent people that you'll ever meet. He really gives power to the idea about the person that will treat everybody the same, regardless of what they can do for him. He's just that guy. He's a regular Joe. He's very much like Joe Sakic. What's interesting, they're very similar personalities. Both Hall of Famers, but he's Harrison is a very humble, hardworking He comes to do his business, and we became good friends over the years. And he introduced me to aviation. He's one of the best pilots and one of the best evangelists for aviation that has ever walked this planet. And so it, we really enjoy each other, and it's a great relationship. I'm honored to be his friend.
That's Charlie, a really good point. I never thought about that in watching the doc. You're right. Like the Burnaby Joe, low key, just grab your shovel and go to work, Joe Sakic, and the carpenter who became a Hollywood legend in Harrison Ford. They're very similar personalities. You're absolutely right.
Well, I'll tell you a little anecdote that one of the things that we used to observe about Joe, now it may have changed, I'm sure it's changed, but this was in the 1990s, is that you would see the NBA athletes go into the weight room. And they had new shoes on, and they had, you know, licensed merchandise, and it was always clean, and it was always fresh, and, you know, and they looked like all the NBA athletes looked like movie stars. And Joe would come in, and he wore the same pair of shorts and the same torn t-shirt that went back to his Quebec days, almost like it was like homeless couture. It was unbelievable. And that's who Joe was. Joe was an everyman. And so it's a very attractive quality, frankly, you know?
I know that it really came down to the money. You match the offer sheet. Joe Sakic stays in Colorado. But was there anything behind the scenes that also happened? Like in my head, Joe Sakic and Harrison Ford are having dinner together that week. Like, did anything else happen to that effect to kind of say, hey, man, we want you here?
Actually, I think Harrison was probably running around Europe trying to release Air Force One throughout the rest of the world, because that's the way it works.
Yeah.
You release it domestically, and then they go on their international tour. No, the two did not connect until this recollection here. And look, it was... I think, you know, I've said that initially I really wasn't interested in doing this because I wasn't interested in looking back at something like this with sort of a self-serious, you know, tone to it. Because but if they were willing to make it funny, that I thought it might work. And Amazon was great. Amazon Prime was great. And ESPN was great because they said, you know, something narrative programming, let's you know, the filmmaker stretch his legs a little bit and maybe we'll have something better to show at the end. I think they did a nice job.
Yeah, they certainly did. It definitely has some charm to it. So the documentary is out on Prime in Canada, April 16th and April 17th on ESPN Plus. Saving Sakic, the crazy, almost too unreal to believe tale of Joe Sakic. Thanks for your time, man. Saving Sakic. People will definitely enjoy it. Thanks for your time.
All right. See y'all.
All right. We are at the doorstep of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So why don't we play a little game called the Playoff Panic Meter? We're going to give you our panic meter ratings for certain teams as they embark on their postseason journeys. Wish, why don't we start with the New York Rangers?
Well, the New York Hockey Rangers, Arda, they might win the President's Trophy, which is one level of panic because teams that win the President's Trophy don't often then go and win the Stanley Cup, as tradition has showed us. They have some struggles at 5-on-5. I've chronicled those. The Rangers fans didn't want to hear it, but I think that their play recently has backed up those claims. But that being said, Arda, they're playing pretty well entering the playoffs, and I think that their draw, whether it's, you know, the 2-3 series against the Islanders or the Islanders in the wild card or whoever the last wild card is, I think the Rangers get a good draw. So I will set their panic meter at 5. Straight down the middle, Arda, a 5 for the Rangers.
Straight down the middle, Wyshynski, New York Rangers. That didn't seem possible, but I like where we're going here. You're maturing before our very eyes.
That's right. I know. It's what's funny about being a Devils fan and writing about the Rangers, I've learned, is that even when you try to pay them a compliment, mm-hmm, Rangers fans still come at you. They're like, You know, how do you have a job? I pointed out that the fans cheered Matt Rempe when he was taking a faceoff and said that he has become a cult icon on the level of Ty Domi and Sean Avery.
How dare you?
And someone's response was, ESPN should fire this clown. I'm like, all right, it's just, all right, whatever. I'm sorry I ever mentioned the Devils fan thing. So I'll move on in life.
Yes. Well, we'll move on here too. The Dallas Stars, my playoff panic meter is very low, actually. In fact, it's at a zero. I'm not panicked about the Dallas Stars at all.
Not at all.
No, I know they possibly will play the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Vegas Golden Knights might get Mark Stone for game one of the postseason. We talked about it earlier, but listen, when the Dallas Stars are firing, if they are at their maximum height of their powers, they're the best team in the NHL. They are the deepest team in the NHL. They have a lot of fantastic pieces there. Their goaltending is solid. Their defense core is lights out. And if you get the offensive production from the players that, so what? They didn't have like as great seasons as last year, like a Jason Robertson or something, but you get that output in the playoffs. That team is scary, can go on a cup run. So I'm putting it at zero. I am not concerned about the Dallas Stars, Wish.
It's funny. I think there's a couple of matchups that the Knights could have in the first round. If it's Dallas and Vegas, I actually think it benefits Vegas to get benefits Dallas rather to get Vegas early, you know, before the Golden Knights really get the machine cranked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a good point from you. I mean, I don't think I could ever go zero on the panic meter, at least a two, maybe.
It's not what? Okay, fine. Minor. Nah, I'm staying at zero. Boston Bruins.
I'm going to go with an eight on the panic meter, and I'll tell you why. I'm a little nervous about the Bruins playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, granted, the Lightning haven't been lighting the world on fire in the last couple of weeks here, basically like a 500 team. What worries me, though, is if you put that core group of Lightning players in any playoff series, they can win it. I mean, when you talk about Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, Hedman, and then especially Andre Vasilevsky, and that's the key to the series. Like, if Vasi plays playoff Vasi hockey, I think the Lightning could beat the Bruins. If he is more ordinary, then I think the Bruins can advance. But it's not the draw I'd love for them. I'd love the Bruins to play the second wild card instead. That's not going to be in the cards. I probably would have preferred them to play the Leafs too, to be honest with you.
I was just going to say that would have been your panic meter would have been way down.
Yeah,
if
my
it was
panic
the
meter
Leafs.
Is about a negative one if it's the Leafs, but like. But when it comes to the Lightning, I'm a little concerned about Tampa's ability to really have their veteran core put the pedal down and the Vasilevsky of it all.
You and many Bruins fans are like, what's so bad about playing a Florida team in the first round of the postseason? The Colorado Avalanche, I'm high on them. They're playing the Winnipeg Jets. I think that the Avs can definitely win that series and build momentum. Comes down to goaltending, really, for me. Are they going to get quality goaltending that will, like, they've proven they can outscore their problems, and a rare team that can do that in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not at a zero like the Dallas Stars, because I do think that a Dallas-Colorado playoff matchup would be lights out. But I'm not concerned about the Avs either. I'm going to put it at a two.
I gotta be honest with you, man. I think you're really selling the Jets short here. My panic meter for Colorado would be around a six or a seven.
Wow.
The Jets have played remarkably well down the stretch.
Okay.
You know what they can do defensively when they're on their game. You know what goaltender they have in that series. You know what kind of home ice they can have when the whiteout's going and how crazy those Jets fans are going to be. I think they're one of those teams that's peaking at the right time. I've not made my picks yet in these series, but in being asked a lot lately about what series has kind of caught my attention and what team I'm kind of looking at as a potential upset team in the first round, even if they're the higher seed, they'll be the team that is not favored in that series. And quite frankly, I think the Jets have a better than puncher's chance of eliminating the Avalanche in the first round, which is nuts to think Colorado could go out and win in consecutive seasons. But the Jets have been playing that well.
How about another powerhouse in the West, the Edmonton Oilers, Wish?
What about the Edmonton Oilers? I'm going to put the Edmonton Oilers panic meter at seven, and I'll tell you why. I'm a little concerned about Connor McDavid missing some games down the stretch. This team is DOA if McDavid and Draisaitl are at all diminished through injury. I am also a little bit worried about the first round matchup. Now, if it's the Kings, I'm less worried about it. If it's the Vegas Golden Knights for some reason, I'm very worried about it. Edmonton Oilers. Overall, look, they're my cup pick before the season. I wish I was a little bit more confident. I wish the panic meter was a little bit lower. But at this point, given the way that the seeding has gone and given the way that McDavid's health is at this point, I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, and honestly, cup or bust, that will always add to the panic meter, especially among the fans, which leads me to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, here's the thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The panic meter begins at 10. It's not 0 to 10, okay? Let's just establish this right now, Wish. The panic meter is already at a 10. Now, if they play the Florida Panthers, it'll be at an 11 because... Yo. They lost to Florida last season after we all know the story about the second round of the playoffs, not being there since 04, blah, blah, blah. But there's also the possibility that they face the Boston Bruins and that would put the panic meter at a 15 because of what has happened traditionally to the Leafs against the Bruins.
Again, like, you know, we've talked all about like playoff expansion, what have you. I mean, like, the Leafs are the greatest example for realignment of the playoffs, right? I mean, like, the idea that you have cycled through Boston, Florida, Tampa in perpetuity, if you're the Leafs, as you're trying desperately to get out of that division, it's just like, it's so unfair. It really is unfair. Like, you look at the Rangers and the matchups they get versus what the Leafs know what they were getting since the start of the season, and there is no comparison.
The panic meter.
Yeah,
can't wait for postseason and the takes on Twitter. Speaking of social media and also interaction, the playoffs are around the corner. As we know, you can join the drop group in the ESPN Playoff Hockey Challenge, and you can face off against Wish, against me. Join the drop group, and let's have some fun. It's going to be cool doing some postseason playoff fantasy hockey. Can't wait.
All right.
I'm going to win, Wish. I'm going to win. All right, buddy?
I've seen my picks in previous seasons, and I can assure you that you will win.
Brimming with confidence, Greg Wyshynski. Thanks for listening to The Drop, everybody. Remember, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well as the NHL and ESPN YouTube. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on Friday.
See you.